I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before.
Two brothers.
Harley's got all the facts tonight. Jasper is a trivia weapon. Get out of his way.
A bunch of trivia questions.
Trivia is cool, and that makes these guys two cool guys.
Everything's on the line in today's episode of
How Do They Keep Getting It Right?
Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump?
Giddy up. It is trivia time here on Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. My name is Jasper. Joining me is my co-host, also my brother, Harley. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Good. I mean, the illusion of podcasts, it feels like we haven't recorded in a very long time, but when everyone's listening, it'll just be a week later.
I know. Like, and for some people, it might even be a road trip later.
Do you think
No. I mean, during the same road trip, rather.
Do you think people listen to us in, like, back like of a marathon?
We've both looked at the stats.
Okay. Wow. Well, no, by the time this is aired, it'll be the biggest podcast in the land, mate.
You know. Exactly.
Do you have a fun fact to kick us off here in this, the sixth episode of the first season of Trivia Champ or Trivia Champ?
I do. I found out something, like, mind-changingly interesting today.
Really?
Okay. You know the word dumpster?
I do know it.
Do you know why?
Not intimately.
Do you know why it's called a dumpster?
Because you dump stuff in it?
You would think so, right?
Yeah.
I don't think the stir was a particularly common, like, appendix to a word in, like, the 30s or 20s when it came out. It was a portmanteau of the Dempster brothers.
Yeah.
Who had, like, a waste removal business and the word dump.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So imagine that being your, like, contribution to the world. The word dumpster.
Surely you would prefer your legacy for it to just be called a Dempster, wouldn't you? And then people go, Dempster. Oh, yeah, like Trent Dempster, the guy who made the bin. You know, like, do you think you wouldn't want to be associated with that?
I don't know, but I would really like to know, and I should have looked this up, the stir ending of a word, is that where it all started?
As in, like, well,
like calling someone
spinster or something.
Yeah,
I think that's probably older.
Spinster's probably older, but like calling you the Jaspster.
Oh, like me, the mixer.
Yeah, like exactly.
That. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, yeah. It's just a cute little nickname, generally. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that the last ever letter written by George Harrison is owned by Mike Myers, the film star and comedian. And the reason is George Harrison was a massive Austin Powers fan, and he wrote a letter as he was, like, dying in, I think, 2001 or so, when they were filming Austin Powers 3, about how much he'd enjoyed the second Austin Powers, and particularly Mini-Me, the small version of Dr. Evil in the second Austin Powers film. And he'd written this letter to Mike Myers saying he'd gone all around Europe trying to find, like, I think it was a Mini-Me, like, toy or something. And he wrote this letter, and literally it was hand-delivered to Mike Myers, like, I think the week that he died.
That...
So the last ever letter written by George Harrison was fan mail about Mini-Me.
So, like, that's weird, because George Harrison had, like, esophagus cancer, or, like, died of a long illness.
Yeah, very
so
sad. Very
it's sad. An odd thing for it to have been a real priority towards the end of his life.
Yeah, I suppose, though, when you're ill like that, and maybe you know that you're not long for this world, maybe you just start to figure out what's important. Like, Mini-Me dolls around Europe.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, maybe he really did have a life with no regrets, but, you know, you'd think maybe, like, there'd be someone he'd want to make amends with, like, no.
Yeah, it's like...
No, he wants to reach out to Austin Powers.
Yeah, George, don't himself. You want to see the Northern Lights or, you know, go on a hot air balloon? No, I want the Mini-Me doll. well, that's a stirring tribute to George Harrison. Let's see the rules and get on with the game before people have a chance to tune out from that.
Harley and Jasper have nominated three special subjects to be quizzed on by the other person. The three special subject round will feature five questions for each contestant. The trivia champ will be the person who answers the most questions correctly by the end of the game.
So those are the rules of engagement. Harley, what am I going to be hearing questions about today?
You're going to be hearing about always something there to remind me.
Mm-hmm.
Also known as, and shoulda, woulda, coulda.
I like to think of this as the follow-up category to Stop It, I Don't Like It that was on a couple of weeks ago. Like, oh my, shoulda, woulda, coulda.
So right. I got to say. That went fully over my head.
You know what I mean? You know when people say that? It's like, oh my, shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Yeah. It was very hard to come up with questions that incorporated all of them. So you've basically got should questions, would, and could questions.
Should you continue this podcast after defaming George Harrison 25 years after his death? Mm. Okay, well, you're hearing questions about for the millionth time. Potpourri, which for anyone who doesn't know, is just a mix of everything. I hope, because I haven't written 5 questions about literal potpourri. And the final one is tragically misunderstood.
Round 1.
Okay, mate. Well, why don't you kick us off with... Was there always something there to remind me?
Yep, that we'll start with always something.
I was trying to think which 80s song, because I was going to go through and do a bunch of different 80s songs, and I was going to do like Hungry Like the Wolf or Take On Me. A lot of them didn't really work, so hopefully this one does.
Or like Funky Town. Yeah, okay.
That was a really great one.
Anyway. Okay. So, what American celebrity is haunted by a 2007 video of him eating a cheeseburger shirtless on the floor of a Las Vegas hotel room while evidently drunk?
What?
I know.
I have no memory of this.
Really?
Really, yeah. Is this something that's well known or like...
Yes, yeah. I think it was like one of the first like internet viral like videos. Like memes.
2007, did you say?
2007, yeah.
I gotta say, this does sound like something maybe my great mate Ben Affleck would maybe get tied up in. Because I think there's a photo of him like eating like a donut or something and he looks just a little bit disheveled.
Yeah.
But I don't know. 2007, I feel like he was kind of still on the comeback trail.
Yeah, no, this person's been washed up.
Okay, for a while.
For a while at this point and hasn't really clawed back a whole heap of credibility.
Yeah. Shirtless on the floor of a loss. I mean, it sounds like he's not washed up at all. Sounds like he's living his best life, to be honest. I really don't even know where to... I mean, I'm going to think maybe someone sort of... who has a history of being a bit of a party boy or something.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Maybe someone in a sort of comedy to action ilk. Like, I don't think it's Daniel Day-Lewis or, for instance, or Morgan Freeman, perhaps. No. Maybe someone a bit more lowbrow. I'm going to... Oh, jeez. I feel like if it was someone really main character like Adam Sandler or someone, I would know about it. Mm. But the fact I haven't heard of this makes me wonder about that.
I vaguely knew about it. Yeah. And then like in my kind of, I looked up for this category, embarrassing celebrity moments. I went, oh yeah, that was a shocker.
I'm gonna go with David Spade. I really don't have any idea.
Oh man, you nearly gave me a heart attack. You're locking in David Spade?
Yeah.
It's another David.
Who?
David Hasselhoff.
Oh no.
I was going, no way his reason to that. Okay. And I put a bit of a note, you know, just for discussion points after.
Yep.
I wrote, the video is over 6 minutes long, ?
What? What happens in the 6 minutes? How slowly does he eat this cheeseburger?
Very slowly, and there's somebody talking to him who I think is also drunk, who's filming the video, a woman, and I didn't look too deeply into it. I also, in my research, though, found out there's a song called Hasselhoff Cheeseburger. Okay. And it was by, a relatively famous musician as well. How does it go? I didn't listen to it.
How does his rig look in the video?
Not bad. Not, really? Not great.
Just like dad bod sort of vibes?
Yes, a bit of a gut on him.
Oh, that's all right, though, yeah. I mean, any body type is all right, but, as in, I feel like if he was, former beach bod David Hasselhoff and then looking really sort of tubby, maybe he'd regret it a bit more, perhaps.
No, I think it's pretty bad. Like, I think it's pretty embarrasses him. Apparently the woman behind, I just googled it to see who wrote the song Hasselhoff Cheeseburger. It's by a band called The Falcon. And the woman behind the camera is Taylor Ann, his daughter. Taylor Ann Hasselhoff.
What?
Yeah.
Jeez, so, that's harsh. Do you reckon he got her a really shit Christmas present 1 year? And she's like, all right, Dad, that's it. The cheeseburger video is coming out.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I came close with the David. So
I was half like, points? No. I was, I don't think I'll give you half points. Okay. Always something there to remind me. Three of what product is hidden in the Yamaha logo as a reminder of one of the company's original products?
Jeez. Well, Yamaha famously makes a lot of different things, from motorbikes to trombones and kind of everything in between. I'm just trying to picture the Yamaha logo. I feel like it's sort of quite triangular. I can't picture it up top of my head, but I think it's from memory. There's like sort of 3 points. So I don't think it's something big.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even like 3 wheels or something, or like 3 dice, maybe. 3. Yeah, you know what? Wheels were my first thought. I'm gonna say it's like three wheels, and maybe they made like tires or something before they made motorbikes.
Fair. No. I like your logic. Believe it or not, they're piano tuning forks.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And according to Yamaha, and I went on the Yamaha Australia website to research this.
Okay.
Each fork represents the customer, the society, and the individual.
The Holy Trinity, baby. The Yamaha Trinity.
Exactly. Yeah.
I've just Googled it. Okay, I can picture it now. It's a little bit different to what I was kind of imagining in my head.
Yeah, but I mean, did you count the three and just think of the customer, the society, and the individual?
That's exactly what I thought of. It sounds like something out of HSC English.
It really, yeah. Okay. Not off to a great start
here.
0 for 2.
I'm really struggling.
I think we're moving up the list from hardest to easiest in this category.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
I'd hope so.
The Harold Holt Swim Centre. The Harold Holt Swim Centre was dedicated to the late Prime Minister of Australia only 2 years after his death in a suspected drowning accident.
Yeah.
On what year's Christmas break did the Prime Minister vanish?
I was hoping you were going to ask where it is, because I'm pretty sure it's in maybe Warrnambool. In like the country town of Warrnambool?
No, it's in Glen Iris.
Is it?
So it's in Melbourne.
Why did I think Warrnambool? Anyway. It was definitely late 60s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I reckon it's... Because he was sort of the start of the Vietnam War era. He was our Prime Minister. So I'm thinking it's like 1967 is the year that came to mind immediately. Early Vietnam era. That was my gut. So I'm going to go... The year was 1967.
Ding, ding, ding. Oh, absolutely correct. And I think probably most listeners will be familiar with the story of the famously, you know, good swimming Holt disappearing off Point Nepean.
It is a shame that, like, he goes missing and everyone's like, oh, he went missing. He was a crap swimmer. But actually, he was a good swimmer. It was just like, swimmer. Obviously, currents and stuff can do you dirty. But also,
not to mention the old Chinese midget sub, wink, wink.
Yeah. You said too much, mate. First we piss off Kim Jong-un, now this. No. Well, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, this is his defining thing, is that he got lost at sea because he swam on the wrong day or something. But probably, he probably swam in the ocean hundreds of times before that.
Yeah.
Did it incident-free. Did it well. Mm-hmm. Looked better than Tony Abbott when Tony Abbott used to do it when he was Prime Minister.
No, he had a bit of a belly.
Harold Holt did.
Yeah.
No, that's because he's a bit older. Old people get bellies.
Why do you think he would have looked better than Tones?
Because I recently watched Nemesis on ABC and I think most people look better than Tones doing it. I think Tones' thing was that his budgies were like bright red as well. And I don't think anyone, maybe actually David Hasselhoff pre-cheeseburger, I don't think many people look good in bright red budgies.
Mm.
It's a very garish colour for budgie smugglers.
I wonder if like that was designed to be off-putting, because red is famously his political enemy's colour. He just wanted everyone to not want to see any more red and go, fine, nah, but...
Red's sultry, mate. Tony's in the mood for love.
Okay. Let's move on, please. Absolutely. Oh. The Hiroshima Peace Memorial, or A-Bomb Dome.
What a segue.
Was originally what kind of building?
This actually is going to annoy me, because I was recently in Japan and I was talking to a few people at the hostel in Kyoto, and they're like, oh, what should I do in Japan? I was like, man, Hiroshima, when we went as a family, absolutely fantastic. You don't even have to be much of a history buff. It's just you go there and it's almost quite eerie, and the way they pay tribute to those who survived and sort of the aftermath is quite stirring. And I remember literally saying, there's a building that sort of the structure of it stood and it's still there. And I can actually remember going, oh, I think it was a post office or a town hall or something. And like, I don't remember what it specifically was. Mm. But it's, I can picture it in my head, because it's literally like, you can see the metal sort of crisscross words. I can't think, but like you can sort of see the foundation, the dome, but not like the sort of top of the dome, like that would have been sealed over by something.
Glass. Presumably.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it possibly is a post office, but I'm just gonna go with that.
I'm upset for you. I was going to accept like some sort of town hall or community hall.
Oh, was it?
Its official designation was the Hiroshima prefectural industrial promotional hall.
Okay.
But I was going to just take city hall, town hall.
Why would a post office be so large, I guess, yeah.
Or, and ornate, not to mention. Sorry.
Well, there is a pretty ornate post office in Australia, to be fair.
Really? Oh, maybe Newtown Post Office.
Kenthurst Post Office, where we grew up.
Oh, yeah.
Mate, the best place to buy your stamps and other assorted collectibles.
Okay. Pete Davidson, you familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Was engaged to a certain pop star, both of whom had tattoos honouring their romance.
Mm-hmm.
They broke up, both of them covered up with black hearts.
Ooh.
Who was the pop star he was engaged to?
I actually think I know this. I think it's Ariana Grande.
Absolutely.
Is it? Yeah, good. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I marvel at that guy's ability to always be dating someone quite good looking. Maybe he's really a lovely person. I've never met him, obviously. Mm. But wasn't he dating a Kardashian for a bit?
Kim. Yeah.
Wow. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah, no, he, I think funny guys, you know?
Yeah, true.
Funny guys get the girls.
He's pretty funny, yeah.
So she had Pete tattooed on her finger.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some sort of dangerous woman artwork behind his ear to...
Wow.
To, honor geez, her.
That wouldn't feel nice having to get more on top of that behind your ear.
Yeah, I don't know. He's also got a Hillary Clinton tattoo.
Is he?
Yeah, when Hillary Clinton found out about it, she said it was made it considerably less awkward that she has a Pete Davidson tattoo.
So is that the end of always something there to remind me?
That is. That's 5 questions. You're on 2. Tough start for Jasper, but we can see him getting in the swing of things.
Okay, so you're hearing questions about for the millionth time. Question 1. Also the last published in his lifetime, what is generally regarded as Dr. Seuss's best-selling book with 12.5 million copies shifted by 2016? Sales increase consistently each year, given the book remains a popular gift for a specific occasion. What are you thinking?
So, first I was thinking Cat in the Hat.
Okay.
Be a great gift if you got a cat or a hat. So two occasions to be gifted it.
This large anthropomorphic animal came into your house and just started messing things
exactly.
up. And we thought of you instantly with this book.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a dope book. Learned a lot of things from that.
Yeah.
I saw a funny tweet, actually.
Yeah, go.
It was me explaining my favorite book to someone. I sent it to Sachin, not to you. Did I send it to you, actually?
No, I think I know this tweet, though.
So, you know how most caterpillars just like a normal amount of hungry? Is that the tweet you were thinking?
Yeah.
So,
Cat in the Hat.
Cat, no. I'm not thinking Cat in the Hat.
Okay.
No. I'm actually thinking one of the ones that's a bit more philosophical is Oh, the Places You'll Go. Mm-hmm. And... like I think it's appropriate for a lot of occasions. Maybe not if you get a hat or a cat, but yeah, I'm gonna lock in. Oh, the Places You'll Go.
It is Oh, the Places You'll Go. The book's a popular gift for high school and college graduates, selling 800,000 copies in 2018 alone. So the title's actually inspired by this optimistic greeting that classmates would mm-hmm. exchange at Dr. Seuss's alma mater, Dartmouth College, and students on campus would kind of hype each other up by saying, "Oh, the places you'll go," and then if someone said it to you, you'd have to say, "The people you'll meet," and that was kind of their on-campus greeting. So, with that, I'll be actually leaving the podcast after this episode to write my own children's book. Hey, bro, it's $5 schooners at Manning Bar. So, thank you.
Was that actually a greeting on campus, was it?
Yeah, it's pretty lame, isn't it?
I can just imagine, because he would have been going to college in like the 30s. I can just imagine people in like suits with like wicker hats going, you know. Yeah. Well, good chap.
All the places you'll go. Yeah, so it is popular. I was thinking maybe you'd get caught and maybe go the wrong way with the popular gift and go The Grinch That Stole Christmas, which I think is up there. But you'll go generally listed as
the... Why would you give, like, The Grinch That Stole Christmas to someone to celebrate Christmas?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of the last book you should be
getting. Horton Hears a Who, you know, the more environmental activism, the more we should be reading that book.
That's true, yeah, that's true. All right, question 2. In February 2024, Australia's National Basketball League welcomed its 1 millionth guest for the season during a finals match between the Illawarra Hawks and the Tasmania Jack Jumpers in Hobart. But what kind of animal is a Jack Jumper?
A Jack Jumper?
Yeah. Have you heard of it?
I know that the Tasmanians are very proud of it, and I tend to ignore things that the Tasmanians are proud of.
Okay.
I think it might be a Jack Jumping ant, though. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing to be proud of. Like, you know, imagine, like, Americans, like, we got a bald eagle. you know, like...
Do you think that's something to be proud of? An eagle?
No, no, like, yeah, I think that's something to be proud of. Like, yeah. I can think of, like people being proud, like, national animals, usually pretty fearsome, and not the Tasmanians are... nation, but imagine you defining him being like, just watch this ant. Oh, I just jumped a jack.
You didn't look back, it's gonna do it again.
So either it's an ant, or I just made myself look very stupid when you say it's like a small kangaroo or something. Gonna look an ant.
It is an ant, yeah. So it's known for leaping around while it's agitated or foraging. It's a venomous ant native to Australia, common in Tasmania, it's kind of the most common there. And in areas where jackjumpers are common, population surveys show that 2 to 3% of people have generalized allergic reactions to their stings, with about half of those reactions having the potential to be life-threatening. So that's not good. The millionth fan coming through the gates at the NBL marked the first time since 1996 that the basketball league had welcomed that many fans in a season. So that's pretty cool.
When you said that, and then you said the millionth guess, but what kind of animal is, and I was going to go... kind of animal was the millionth guess? Like, did they have like a ceremonial like koala bear carrying it or something?
Alright, question three. The Ford Model T was the first car in the world to sell 10 million units, achieving that feat in 1924. But from two guesses, can you name either the first car to sell 20 million units or the first car to sell 30 million units?
Do I need to assign it to which one?
No, but I think if you get this right, it'll be obvious which one is which.
Okay. Well, I think the two cars are probably the VW Beetle and the Toyota Corolla.
What makes you think that?
Well, I know the VW Beetle classic body shape is the largest production run of any car without a change in body shape. And I know the Toyota Corolla is the largest badge of cars ever sold. Because it's, I mean, it has... evolved over time, but it's been called that, you know, since I think the early 80s or late 70s. So yeah,
you're absolutely correct on both counts. According to the Guinness World Records, the Volkswagen Beetle was the first to sell 20 million, achieving that feat in Mexico in 1981, while the 30 million Toyota Corolla was sold in 2005 in Japan. So well done, you got that very quickly.
So Mexico, Pueblo City would have been where the factory was.
Is that where they're made in?
That's where they were made, yeah. And if you go to Mexico, which I have, just a little flex there.
Yeah, that's okay.
You'll find that there's still a lot of old school VW Beetles driving around. Very easy to work on. And the rear mounted engine is good, especially for slopey, poorly paved roads, because you always have traction under the wheels.
Well, that's very... I thought that was quite a hard question, to be honest. I reckon I might have got Corolla, but I asked our dad that when I caught up with him the other day, and he got both of them very quickly as well. So there you go. Maybe it's just... guy knowledge that I don't have.
You're absolutely breezing through for the millionth time. You're on 3 out of 3.
We haven't recorded that many episodes, but yeah, I tend to breeze through these things.
Do you? All right, mate. Okay, question four. In what year did Australia's population click over 15 million for the first time? To mark the occasion, then Minister for Immigration and Ethnic Affairs, Ian McPhee, and that was his title, presented the baby... named Sally Hodgson, who was thought to be the 15 millionth Australian, with a statuette.
Okay, so my first thought was that it was going to be a lot more recently than we'd assumed. Yeah. I can never remember the Australian population being below 20 million.
Okay.
So I was going to think early in my childhood, but frankly, I don't think in my lifetime there would have been a Minister for Ethnic Affairs.
Yeah. Immigration and Ethnic Affairs. He had a full book, mate, so yeah, let's not make light of that.
Double portfolio there. Yeah.
Good stuff, Ian.
Good, well done, Minister McPhee.
Ian the Nanny McPhee, they called him.
Nicely done. Everything was kind of coming up Australia in the year 1989, you know?
Okay.
1988, 1989.
Okay. I'll pay a year either side, by the way, because this is pretty hard.
The Expo was going on.
Okay.
You know? I reckon 1989 is going to be my guess. Because AC/DC were around in that era, and I think that really would have caused the population to spike a bit as they were recording, you know, some of their less renowned albums in the late 80s, early 90s.
Are people getting down to it more often, listening to AC/DC, like, than before AC/DC existed?
Yeah, it's like the Barry White of Australia.
Like the mood lighting comes on and it's like,
let's go, babe.
Anyway, our parents listen to this, man. We can't make jokes like that. All right. Okay, you're very close, and AC/DC actually were definitely around this year as well, so maybe your logic does still stand.
I mean, the fact that AC/DC have been continuously playing since the early 70s, like...
True, yeah, the window was pretty wide, but it was actually 1982.
82?
So I tried to find Sally on LinkedIn to see what she's up to these days, but I couldn't. And I went on Instagram and I caught myself, searching Sally Hodgson, and I was like, oh, this is getting a bit weird, man, so I stopped doing that. But a 1982 Women's Weekly article I found about this said her father was a research scientist at Flinders University, and that her older sister, Madeline, got to miss school to go to Sally's award ceremony. So, big day all round for the Hodgson family.
Like,
wins all round for them.
Imagine being one day old and already having an honour bestowed on
you. Yeah. Well, so the statuette that was given, speaking of that honour, was a brass sculpture on a black marble base of a hand holding a globe of the world. Sally also received $500 in a bank account, which, with inflation, is worth about $2,200 today. But the thing with giving a baby a bank account is she spent it all on dummies and nappies. So, come on.
Ridiculous.
Guys, Ian should have probably thought that one through a bit better.
I reckon $15 million would have been pretty, you know, like... Exactly. You're our millionth website clicker, like, here's $1 million kind of... Anyway.
You have won $15 million in the Sao Paulo lottery. Yeah, for sure. Okay. That's your first slip-up of the day. Question 5. Inspired by a YouTube video of a man counting to 100,000, in 2017, an American former Air Force serviceman named Reno Baker uploaded a video to YouTube in which he clicked his computer's mouse 1 million times, which he claimed was a world record for fastest person to click a mouse 1 million times. Within 1 hour... How long did it take for Reno to click his mouse 1 million times?
Within an hour. He uploaded the video to YouTube.
The whole thing is on YouTube.
He didn't stream it?
No, I think it might have been streamed, but it's definitely still on YouTube now if you search for it.
I'm going to go... I reckon you can do a lot of clicks if you think about it. And you got 10 fingers, you know, so 9 of them get at rest while the other one's clicking.
That's true. Are you subbing out to use your pinky, though? I feel like it's got to be
Pinky's getting a quick run in the middle just to relieve some cramps.
It's like when the coach puts on, the player that's never played before. It's like, you're coming in, the rest of the team's injured.
Yeah, no.
It all relies on you.
No, it's like when the team's winning, 52-0 and they give someone a run for the first time, you know, in easy conditions. I'm going to say it took Reno, which is a great name. I'm going to say it took him 19 hours. And what an amazing way to use your retirement as a veteran.
He's a brave veteran here, yeah. It actually was under... You're actually overs there, mate. It's 17 hours, 27 minutes and 7 seconds. So I'll read a quote from Reno himself here. I was planning to watch some anime, listen to some music, and just pass the time any way I could. But after 100,000 clicks, I realized how focused I was on clicking fast. I didn't want to divide my attention. He credited his basic military training for the endurance he needed to break the world record, and celebrated at 500,000 clicks by stopping and having some cake. But he basically, if you watch it, and I didn't watch the whole thing.
No.
I didn't watch all of it, but if you skip through, the whole thing, he's going on the whole time. He gets up and has some bathroom breaks, but it's not like he goes and gets tired and is like, duh, duh, duh.
No.
He's going
How do you know he didn't take a bathroom break?
He did take bathroom breaks.
Oh, I was going to say.
No, he gets up for a bit and yeah, it's not like he just pisses himself and keeps clicking.
That's what I was thinking. I thought, he doesn't take a bathroom break, and I was going,
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Sometimes he changes technique. He does the double fingers for a bit. But I don't know. It just makes you realize how big of a number... This is a dumb thing to say, but how big of a number 1 million is. Because I watched it for a bit, and he got to 20,000 while I was watching. And that was 10 minutes or something. I was like, I just want to make sure this is a legit thing, whatever. And
And how
17 and a half hours.
How does it count it? So he's got this app that counts.
Yeah, it's on the screen, to be honest. The whole time, it's and you can see the number ticking over on the screen. And you can hear him actually clicking the mouse. So it's real.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Are you impressed?
No.
Okay, let's move on. So at the end of round one, Harley, you've finished with 3 out of 5. And I'm on 2 out of 5, heading into round number 2.
Round 2.
All right, we've just come back. We've had a bit of a break. I've clicked my mouse 1 million times and broken a few of my fingers, but I should be right to continue for round 2.
Mm-hmm. Also, awesome. Well, I was going to say awesome.
Yeah.
You're hearing about also known as.
Oh, great. Okay.
Awesome. Anyway, fancy a drink. What modern country was once known as Bourbon Island?
Is the fancy drink just a bit of flavour text at the start?
Like, yes.
I like it.
I got AI to write these questions. So.
True, how long is it before ChatGPT becomes the third brother?
Oh my goodness, imagine if you played against ChatGPT. Anyway.
Three brothers. A bunch of trivia questions. ChatGPT is a weapon. Get out of his way. I wonder how the people that did our voiceovers are going.
Mm.
Yeah.
I wonder if they think about us as much as we think about them.
Do they ever look at the moon and think, was I looking at the moon at the same time?
Exactly, yeah.
I completely forgot. Oh, Bourbon Island.
Bourbon Island. Fancy drink.
Let's have a think. Well, I think probably somewhere in the Caribbean, perhaps, where there's like spirits and stuff. Well, like, what's bourbon made of? It's like refined sugar, I think.
Well, bourbon's very American whiskey.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, I mean, like Caribbean, maybe.
Yeah, well. But not out of pity. I might give you a bit more of a clue to this one. So bourbon, French word.
Yes.
Also known at one point, Il Bonaparte.
Il Bonaparte. Okay. So it was
named after Napoleon at one point, and that gives up the fact that I was going to tell you afterwards.
Okay. So I'm thinking North America / French interests in and around North America, perhaps.
Well, not necessarily North America, but definitely French.
Okay, I'm going to have a guess. Il Bonaparte. Well, I know that Napoleon was exiled on St. Helena.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why it was called Il Bonaparte. Maybe it was because, like, oh yeah, it's literally the island he was on.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking in St. Helena?
I'm going to, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Oh.
Reunion.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah. And now I don't have a fact to tell you.
So
that's why I didn't want that actually to be part of the question, but I didn't want you thinking like Jamaica or something like that. Mm. I want you to be thinking distinctly French territory.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, there you go. Yeah. Interesting.
Okay, you'll have better luck with the next one, I hope. Elon Musk.
I know him.
You know him? Personally. Yeah.
Friend of the show, Elon.
Elon Musk in the last few years welcomed a child with a very non-phonetic name. Do you remember this happening?
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
I will pronounce the name XASH-A12.
Okay.
Who's the mother of the child?
I think I know this.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I remember the episode of Maury that it's like...
You are
Elon, the... Elon, when it comes to XASH-12... No, I don't remember that, but I do remember that it was with the musician Grimes, I think.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it.
Fantastic.
Excellent. He also, believe it or not, has other children by the name Griffin, Saxon, Nevada, and Techno Machinist.
Which of those names would you most like to be called? Presuming that our last name, Bruce, is the same.
Techno Machinist, Techie Bruce.
That's actually pretty cool. Techie.
Techie.
Or Mackie. Techie's better.
Techie Mackie.
Tech Mac.
Tex-Mex. What about you?
I think I could pull off Nevada. Or is Nevada for a girl?
I think Nevada's a girl, yeah.
Saxon?
What US state would you be, actually?
Yeah, if you had to name yourself after a US state.
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, would it be hyphenated?
No.
Just like that?
No, it would be NU, capital Ooh. H.
And maybe an umlaut over the U in new?
Exactly.
Okay, I like that. What would I be? Maybe Ohio, I think is quite strong.
Ohio, wow.
Yeah, I think Colorado.
Oklahoma would be called Okie.
Yeah, Oklahoma. But the kids in school would call you, they'd probably find a way to make fun of you if your name was Oklahoma. Let's just say that. I know what teenage boys are like.
Homer.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, I think Colorado or Ohio.
Colorado would be cool. Col.
Yeah, and then you could be like, or like Rad something. Rado.
I don't think any of them coming up with Rad.
Laredo.
Well done. It is indeed Grimes.
Thanks, man.
And also, plain fact, the A12
in
the name is named after the A12, the predecessor to the SR-71 Blackbird, according to Mr. Musk himself.
I'm sure when he tells the school bullies that that's what his name is, it makes it all better.
I think my dad's Elon Musk is a pretty good comeback to a school bully.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
Okay. The end of Casino Royale.
Yep.
James Bond names his martini of gin, vodka, and quina lillet. by what name? It's another character in the movie slash book.
Why are you whispering?
Because I didn't write it, but I think it's fair. Oh, okay. You know that.
What's the woman's name in that who double crosses him? Spoilers, sorry. Vesper, I think her name is in that. Who else is in that movie? Felix is his little like mate. Actually don't remember like many of the main like M and Q and stuff being in Casino Royale that much. Are they in it?
In the film?
Yeah.
In the book, M I think's only ever spoken of. It's been a while since I've read the book.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to say Vesper because I feel like Vesper Martini, is that even a I feel like I've even heard of that in real life perhaps. So I'm going to say Vesper.
Absolutely right. I don't know if it is like the kind of thing you'll find on a cocktail menu, but yes, Vesp is the name for it. And come to think of it, No, I think he does name after Vesper in the book as well.
Yeah, okay.
In the book, he plays baccarat instead of poker.
Really? What's baccarat?
I don't know.
Let's move on.
I think it's baccarat actually. Maybe it's
like another like casino game.
It's No, I think it's Baccarat because that's the game that James Bond likes to play in all the novels.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And the early films.
Huh.
Okay. You're doing well. 2 out of 3.
Thanks, man.
What soft drink was originally known as Brad's Drink before changing its name to the branding we know today?
I think I know this. I think I always glitch on this the same way that I was glitching a couple of weeks ago about Blue Origins and not remembering if it was Bezos or whoever was behind that. I think this is Pepsi or Dr. Pepper, but I think it's Pepsi.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah, it's not, because I think in my head I go, his name was Dr. Brad Pepper. But I don't think that's correct.
Damn, I was going to make that joke. No, yeah. Caleb Bradham was his name.
Oh.
He used the Brad from his last name. And the name Pepsi, did you know this, comes from the word dyspepsia.
I thought it was from pepsin, the stomach acid. Because wasn't it used as like a... Like, this helps you, like, break down, like, your food. It's a scientific fact.
Dyspepsia means indigestion.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean...
Probably, yeah, like, similar.
Similar, words, yeah, for sure. Okay, 3 from 4. Rolling into the last question of also known as. The bass player of the 80s indie group, the House Martins, has the given name Norman. By what DJing alias is he better known as?
I reckon I know who this is. Yeah. Norman, the funk soul brother himself, Fat Boy Slim, perhaps DJ Norman Cook.
Ding, ding, ding.
So he was a bass player in a band, was he?
Yeah, the House Martins is what the band is called.
I can't say I've heard of them, but I have heard of Fat Boy Slim.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, the funk's really coming up, brother, for you right now.
You're the funk soul brother. The funk soul brother was the friends we made along the way.
Exactly, yeah. See, for the longest time, I thought it was the funk is so brother.
The funk is so brother.
Yeah, but yeah, I can but see the that. Is wasn't there. I didn't realize it was soul.
So you thought it was funks, as in like funk.
It's like, wait. Yeah, right about now, the funk's so brother. You know?
It's like, a descriptor of the funk. Yeah, okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
But it's like the funk soul. I mean, it's no less confusing.
No.
The actual words. But, yeah.
That's a song that I don't think I've ever listened to in its entirety.
It's quite long and it just does repeat that over and over and over again.
The one that's also like that is Put Your Hands Up for Detroit.
Yeah.
A lovely city, but anyway.
Yeah.
4 from 5.
They just want to make sure that you put your hands up for Detroit. They're insisting.
Yeah. It's like...
Put them up.
I've listened to it like for the first couple of minutes and then I go, no, it's definitely hands. Okay, I'll put them up. And it's for Detroit. 4 out of 5. Well done.
Thanks, man. All right. Are you ready for potpourri? Because like we said, this could be a bit of anything. It's a bit of a risky one to ask for.
Yeah, I don't know why I did it.
Well, I'm happy you did because it was very easy to write questions for. Question 1. On the evening of May 14, 1998, 82-year-old Frank Sinatra suffered a massive heart attack and was rushed to Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. His ambulance is rumored to have made it to the hospital very quickly due to the fact that most people were not on the roads, but at home watching the series finale of which popular television program? And the date was May 14, 1998.
You know what ended about then?
What?
Seinfeld.
Okay.
I'm thinking Seinfeld, and I have watched the final episode of Seinfeld, so... Yeah. I think that might be a nice one to kind of wrap up in front of the TV with the people you love.
Yeah, you're correct. It was the Seinfeld finale. It was watched by 76.3 million Americans in its original broadcast, putting it as the fourth most watched TV finale in US history. Do you want to have a guess? Not for bonus points, just for fun, at what any of the top three were?
Okay, Friends.
Okay.
I would think. Big Bang Theory, potentially. Large audience for that. You know, you can get your kids watching Big Bang Theory. Yep.
As long as they're, like, laughing at nerds. Which kids tend to. Just ask Elon Musk's kid that we were talking about before.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw a curveball out there and say Mum with Alice and Jenny.
Everyone was just tuning because they were stoked it was ending. No, it's actually...
I know, Two and a Half Men probably is the last one.
It's actually older shows back when, like, TV was more sort of appointment viewing.
Really?
Yeah, so it's actually MASH is number one.
Okay.
Cheers is second. And The Fugitive is third.
Huh.
Have you seen the movie of The Fugitive?
No.
It's quite good. Yeah, you should watch it. Yeah, yeah. It's got Harrison Ford.
Have you seen the movie of Mum?
I haven't. Is it good?
Yeah, really.
Two thumbs up. Fantastic.
No, I don't think there's a movie, and I don't think there should ever be one of Chuck Lorre's
TV show, to be honest. It's not good. Okay. Question two. As of 2024, Sheikh Hasina is the longest-serving female head of government in the world and is the Prime Minister of which country? Across two separate stints, Hasina has served as Prime Minister for more than 20 of the 53 years since this populist country declared its independence in 1971.
So Sheikh Hasina.
Yeah, and I'll spell it for you. S-H-E-I-K-H. Mm. New word. Hasina, H-A-S-I-N-A.
So Sheikh probably means a Muslim country of some description. Populous is also a bit of a giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
I know Yemen was unified in the 70s at some point, but I don't think you'd call Yemen particularly populous.
Mm-hmm.
One that's coming to mind is what was once known as East Pakistan. It's a country that I've visited, and it's a country I quite enjoyed visiting. Bangladesh is what I'm going to... that comes up as populous, independence around that time, and a Muslim country. So yeah, I'm going to lock that in.
Well done, mate. You've absolutely nailed that. It was indeed Bangladesh. As of 2024, Hasina has served since 2009 and also did so between 1996 and 2002. Angela Merkel is the second longest serving female head of government behind Hasina, having served for 16 years and 16 days as the Chancellor of Germany between 2005 and 2021. Yeah, you loved Bangladesh when you went there, hey?
I did, yeah, yeah.
You were kind of not in Dhaka, though. You were in sort of... Was it Chittagong?
I was in Chittagong, or Chattagram, as they call it there. But, I mean, not in Dhaka. Like, Chittagong is still, like, a city of 10 million people or close to it. Like, it's...
Cool 10 mil.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's... It's a massively populous country for that land area.
Yeah.
Yeah,
true.
But there are a few bigger cities there.
Bangladesh, also the most populous country in the world, never to have won
an Olympic medal.
Correct. All right. Question three. His father, an Argentine military captain, Emilio Marcos Palma, in 1978, became the first person to be born where? After his mother was airlifted to Esperanza Base for the birth.
What was the name?
Emilio Marcos Palma.
And what was the year?
Palma. 1978.
78, okay. Mm. So, 78. I don't think anyone's been born in space yet, and I think that would be a daring mission should they ever send someone to do it.
Or you just know that Elon's next kid's been born up there. Yeah,
if NASA, Bezos, or Musk are listening, don't do it, guys. no, I think I know this. The Argentinians have got a very large part of Antarctica, and Esperanza Base kind of... leads me to think it's probably Antarctica.
Mate, you're on absolute fire today. It was Antarctica, indeed. To date, 11 people have been born in Antarctica, but Palmer's birth remains the southernmost. And for comparison, 11 people have been born in Antarctica, 12 people have walked on the moon. So it's even fewer than that. It's very rare. And this is another little Antarctica fact for everyone. Antarctica has no permanent residents, but a population of between 1,100 and 4,400 work there, depending on the time of year.
Imagine the flex of having Antarctica as place of birth on your passport.
Oh, that'd be awesome, right? Do you think he's like dual citizenship, Argentinian and Antarctican?
Mate, imagine having an Antarctic.
Is that the demonym, Antarctican?
I don't know if one exists. You can get little like sleeves for your passport, so you carry through security. I'm sure someone's designed an Antarctic fake passport.
Oh, I'm sure there's one on Etsy or something, but yeah, for sure.
Buying it right now.
All right, question four. to keep your unbeaten run in potpourri going. In 2012, the NFL banned New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton for a full season and defensive coordinator Greg Williams indefinitely after a whistleblower revealed the Saints had paid bonuses to players who did what during games?
In NFL?
Yeah.
What could you do that would annoy the NFL?
Or that would be like bad enough that a coach got banned for a whole season and the defensive, sort of like the defense coach, got banned indefinitely?
Especially in defense.
Yeah.
They were paying them extra. My guess is it's some sort of a playing violation. It's not like, you know, chewing gum or, you know, gambling. I reckon it'll be something like high tackles, maybe. I don't really know the rules of NFL, but I'll lock in high tackles because the defense would do that specifically. And, you know, if there's not like a serious program for penalties, it might really like put off the opposition.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying, just to clarify, your answer is that to deliberately tackle people high?
Yeah, yeah.
You're very close. It's actually even worse than that. It's
concuss?
Deliberately injuring opposition players.
Oh, that's so awesome.
The saga, which the NFL believed involved between 22 and 27 Saints across three seasons, was colloquially known as Bounty Gate. Now, I normally hate chucking gate on the end of stuff. Bounty Gate sounds pretty cool, though.
Bounty Gate sounds
And it prompted
cool.
some of the most severe penalties in the NFL's history, such as Sean Payton being banned for a year. According to Sports Illustrated, players were typically paid $1,500 for knocking a foe out of the game, but often they would donate that money back into the pot to make the stakes even bigger as the season went on.
That's so, camaraderie right there.
The NFL alleged that by the time the Saints reached the NFC Championship game, which is like really deep in the finals, in January 2020, the stakes were so high that their defensive captain personally offered $10,000 if anyone could knock out superstar quarterback Brett Favre on the opposition team.
Wow.
Yeah. Question five in potpourri. You might not have heard of O Fortuna, the opening movement of Karl Orff's oratorio Carmina Burana, which premiered in 1937. But for what reason would almost any Australian adult recognise the piece of music, which was condensed to a minute in length and given new lyrics in 2005?
I actually know O Fortuna.
Do you? Wait, you know it separately from this?
Yes. O Fortuna, Velut Luna, I think is like the lyrics.
Okay. Why do you know that?
I don't know. Velut Luna is, I think that's
something about the moon, probably.
Yeah, yeah. And it goes, I won't sing it, but, in fact, I didn't realize this was the tune, except I know the song, and I'm kind of running it through in my head. It's a big ad, isn't it?
Can you just describe what that actually is for anyone that maybe doesn't remember or was not in Australia to watch It's a Big Ad?
So It's a Big Ad was a beer ad, I think, for Carlton Draft. And O Fortuna Velut Luna, by the way, like the moon.
Oh, sure.
It's a Big Ad. I think it was Carlton Draft, and it's basically like an ad of massive proportions for the beer. It's very blokey. It's like all the boys running together. I think they're going down like a hill.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of people running together to sort of
make like an image of a man. It's kind of like an invasion kind of looking thing.
It's sort of in a valley, and it's a bunch of people running together, and then the camera pans out, and you see that they're running, and they're making the shape of like a man drinking a beer. And it is for Carlton Draft. So you're absolutely right. I was hoping that you wouldn't get this and we could like play the song and you'd be like, oh, of course, it's that. Anyway, it's a very iconic Australian ad from the 2000s. Arguably probably the most iconic of that time period. Maybe it's not Happy Jam, maybe?
Yeah, I just want milk that tastes like real milk.
Also good, yeah.
Why do they build the Great Wall of China?
Yeah, keep the rabbits out, correct. Lubemobile, 13, 13, 32, that one.
1300655.
Also good.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
not to mention...
Doors plus. No fuss. Yeah. Well,
man.
The amount of time that we clearly spend in front of TV. When people actually watch program TV and ads actually kind of meant something. Correct. Well done. It's a big ad. I actually wrote an essay about It's a Big Ad in first year uni. It was a 2,500 word essay about It's a Big Ad, and it got a high distinction. So whatever. That was the peak of my academic career. The ad was created by George Patterson Y&R, which is a ad agency, and they used this guy called Andrew Lesney, who was the Oscar-winning cinematographer behind Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
to help design the ad.
It's like kind of Fjordland-like territory, right?
Yeah, it looks like it's kind of Lord of the Rings vibe, definitely. It's like quite epic.
Mm.
So at the end of Potpourri, you've picked up 4 out of 5.
What did I drop again?
You dropped the New Orleans Saints. So you're on a very impressive total of 7 out of 10 so far.
I think you got 4 out of 5 for the last one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So you got 6.
Yeah.
So it's a tightly run affair.
Neck and neck.
It's a tightly run affair heading into round number 3.
Round 3.
So round 3. Remind us, Holly, what am I hearing questions about in round number 3?
The long anticipated shoulda, woulda, coulda. What am I listening to questions on?
You're hearing questions about tragically misunderstood.
Ah.
So let's... should we kick it off with shoulda, woulda?
We coulda.
We shoulda.
Let's just...
Oh, this podcast. Yeah. That's the moment we jumped the shark. That was terrible.
Okay. So, should have been a cowboy. It was a debut single for what late country music singer who passed in February 2024?
Oh, so passed away quite recently.
Mm, this month as of filming.
That we're listening to, yeah. I'm just trying to think which people we've lost tragically recently. Yeah, it can't be someone super well known, probably, if it's not jumping. It's not Willie Nelson, you know. I'd remember that if it was only a few weeks ago. Do I know this person?
I'd think so. Yeah, I don't know if the average person would, but it's... I listen to a lot of country music, and I think you would have heard of them by listening through that. Funnily, you mentioned Willie Nelson. From memory, Willie Nelson's last Billboard Hot 100 number one single was with this male singer.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't want to say duet because that kind of implies female.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I don't know. I'm just going to guess. I don't think I'm going to get there either, unfortunately. I can't think of anyone passing away recently. I'm going to guess Merle Haggard.
Merle's been gone a few years. It was Toby Keith.
Okay. I've heard the name, yeah. Probably wasn't going to get there, I don't think.
Yeah, so it actually re-entered the US Hot Country Songs shortly after his death, peaking at number 12 this month. The song Wouldn't It Be Nice is from the Beach Boys album Pet Sounds.
Mm-hmm.
The record sleeve shows the band feeding apples to what animals?
Like farm animals, I think. Like specifically... I think it's like goats and like sheep and stuff, but I think it's goats. Remember, I was thinking this was maybe going to go into another 2000s Australian ad campaign with the Cadbury Wouldn't It Be Nice ad. But no, I think it's like a bunch of goats and like they're standing. I can picture it. It's got like a green sort of outline, the album. Mm-hmm. It says Pet Sounds. I used to have a copy of the CD of Pet Sounds somewhere when I had CDs.
That's odd.
It's a good album though. It's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people really like the Beach Boys and some people not as keen on them. I think people's mileage tends to vary quite a lot on them.
Yeah, ABBA's another one that I think people either love.
Really? I feel like ABBA's quite universally enjoyed, don't you think?
Maybe I just
hate. Not by you, maybe.
No.
Anyway. We listened to them a lot as kids. Maybe we did. Like it sort of got a bit off.
Nah, I don't mind them, but maybe it's just me trying to be contrarian saying I hate them. You're absolutely right. It's goats. There's specifically 7 goats on them. And it was from a photo shoot at the San Diego Zoo. You go to the San Diego Zoo and you get photos feeding the goats, which is a bit odd.
Isn't San Diego Zoo where the end of like Anchorman is? Like, you know, like how Anchorman, like the plot sort of climaxes in the zoo.
It's quite a well-renowned zoo.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And band member Al Jardine said he wanted a more sensitive and enlightening cover than what it was. And I like the thought that they got like a photo shoot with all of the animals. Like they got like ones like all around like a lion, stuff like that. And like it's like, oh mate, the goats ones just developed really well, sorry. Like,
I was like, okay, you guys over there, we're gonna split up into groups. Group A, you're gonna go feed the goats a bit. Group B, tigers.
Yeah.
Group A, possums. Group B, elephants.
Yeah, yeah, but the goats made the thing, and much to Al Jardine's disappointment. So, next question. The Eminem song Stan involves the lyrics about that guy who could have saved that other guy from drowning but didn't, and then XXX saw it all, and at the show he found him. Has Stan referring to what singer-songwriter in this rambling part of the verse?
Okay, I don't know Eminem that well, to be honest, personally or musically, but I know this story of what, like, people think Phil Collins' In the Air Tonight is about.
Mm-hmm.
And people always say, oh, In the Air Tonight, like, it's about, like, Phil Collins. When he was a kid, like, he saw someone drowning and there was an adult, like, on the riverbank and he could have jumped in and saved them, but he didn't. And, like, Phil Collins grew up and we were like, I'm going to invite you to my gig and you're going to be in front row. I'm going to sing you In the Air Tonight.
I tell you, and literally none of that is true.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, that's like the pop culture myth around it. Never happened.
It's
about a Cadbury gorilla playing the drums.
Exactly. I was going to say, we've got some top Australian advertising content coming through.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It's Phil Collins In the Air Tonight, or as Stan calls it, In the Air of the Night.
Better name.
Yeah.
I think.
Especially for a drowning song. But I actually specifically remember that story being told to me by a family friend.
Yeah.
While we were listening to it in the car. And when the drum solo came on, he was like, and this is the point he comes down. And, like, to be fair, when he does it live, he kind of walks around the stage. I think it's like a mood setter first song of his act. He walks around the stage singing it. And, yeah, like, in the solo, the... that's the point that he sits down and all the lights come on.
I'd be sick. Like, I'm sure it's very moving.
Imagine if the story was true, because, like, apparently, like, in the story that I heard of it, at least,
yeah,
like, he's in the front row, like, he's won these tickets somehow. In the front row, and, like, the light goes on him and Phil Collins, and, yeah.
Can you imagine Phil Collins, like, setting up this really, like, elaborate ruse to, like, and you've won a $50,000 Phil Collins experience?
Yeah.
And then, like, everyone else going... in the crowd, wait, why is a spotlight on this one guy? And Phil Collins is angrily yelling at him for a song.
Maybe he's got the memo out to everyone else and it's something else and gotten back to this guy. Like, and I'm
going to... don't tell him, okay? We're going to bring him into concert. I'm going to shame him in front of all of you.
I'm going to add to my bit of the myth as well. I reckon, like, he was surrounded by undercover police officers as well. And as soon as the song was finished, arrested, charged, you know?
What? So you've been arrested with 3 charges of failing to prevent a drowning through song.
Precisely. Okay, you're absolutely right. Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight, 2 from 3 so far in Shoulda, Woulda, Coulda. You familiar with the BBC One game show, Would I Lie to You?
I am.
Who's hosted it since 2009?
I believe that guy's name. I can picture him. And he always reminds me of this is going to be niche. The teacher in the old Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory movie. Don't you reckon? Like, who's like, okay, Charlie, how many blocks of chocolate would you have? And, like, he's like doing the maths or something. And anyway, you know the bit I'm talking about where he's like, if you had 200 blocks of chocolate. And he goes, no, sir, only two blocks. Yeah. And he goes, you only had 2? And, like, he shits on him in front of all the kids.
For being poor.
It's really hard. You poor kid. Why didn't you need more chocolate, you idiot? So anyway, this guy reminds me of that specific bit in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which is a beloved movie in our house. I'm stalling here, but I believe the comedian's name is Rob Brydon. He's Welsh.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. Rob Brydon. Lots of nationally syndicated versions of the show.
Yeah, I can see that.
Not many of them have been particularly popular, though.
There's one in Australia. I watched a bit of it. It's all right.
Yeah.
It's got Chris Taylor.
Yeah, Chris Taylor. He's funny. And Frank Woodley.
Yes.
Woodley's funny.
Yeah.
So international versions have been made in Australia, the US, the Netherlands, Slovakia, Iceland, New Zealand, and Malaysia is one where it was actually popular.
Wow, okay. It's pretty big.
Final question. 3 from 4 so far. You're doing very well. We've got a random guessing number kind of question. You gave me one.
That's what this show's all about, baby.
When defining the word should, Google gives an example used in a sentence.
Okay.
That sentence is, X, £1 million should be enough to buy him out. To the nearest £100 million, how much does Google think will be enough to buy him out?
Do we know who him is?
No, it just is him. And,
not important.
And, like, this is Australian Google as well, so why you'd be buying him out in pounds?
Very true.
You know, and
If you're buying Richard Branson out, he might prefer pounds.
Oh, like I guess it either means like you're buying someone's silence in a court, or like you're buying him out of a business.
Yeah, what's this salacious,
like,
deal?
Why isn't it like $3,000 should be enough to buy the couch?
Yeah, you know, buying him out.
But it's a bit gangster.
Yeah, it is a bit. This is the definition of just something I just have to guess.
To the nearest 100 million?
To the nearest 100 million.
Okay, I'm going to say...
Keep him in mind, you know. Like,
well, he was a famous entrepreneur with lots of assets. So to buy him out,
yeah.
I think we're going to need a cool 900 million pounds.
I wish it was. It's 348 million pounds.
Jeez, his net worth's gone down a bit.
Yeah. Like this is a tanking investment.
Yeah.
Still really well for that round. 3 from 5.
Thank you, sir.
Want to be happy with that?
Fantastic. So I've finished today on 9, I believe. Tragically misunderstood is your category.
And how many do I need to get?
You need to get 3 to win.
Cool.
3 to win, 2 to send to a tiebreak. Question 1. With songs including Bottom's Gonna Be On Top and Willpower, the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Something Rotten is an alternative and fictionalized account of which historical figure's process and life as told from the perspective of a creative rival named Nick. What are you thinking?
I'm actually thinking Willpower.
Yep.
I'm going to think his name's Will.
Yep.
I'm thinking Bottom's going to be on top. I was first thinking something a little bit, you know, sexual.
Okay.
I'm now thinking Bottom might be the Shakespearean character. And therefore, Shakespeare's first name, famously, Will. Who the rival is, Nick, I don't know. Because the main rival was, I think, Christopher Marlowe. So I'm just going to lock in Shakespeare. See how it goes.
That's correct. Yeah. So the creative rival in it is Nick Bottom, essentially. That's like not a real person, but the you know, the comic relief character in Midsummer Night's Dream, Nick Bottom.
Is Bottom, yeah.
So yeah, he's not a real person in real life, but in this play he is like reimagined as like Shakespeare's rival that Shakespeare then puts him in Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, as a comic character.
Kind of, yeah. So
that's
something
slander.
Something Rotten ran on Broadway between March 2015 and January 2017, playing 742 performances. And for portraying the villainous William Shakespeare, Kristen Ball won the Tony for Best Actor in a Featured Role.
And Something Rotten in the State of Denmark.
Exactly, yeah.
Hadn't even thought of that. Brain's just too powerful.
A few little clues in there for you. I think that's the first time I've asked a Broadway question, which is quite astounding because I do really enjoy...
Yeah. Well, you've heard James Bond and country music, so you've been having to deal with my...
Your faves.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well done. So question 2. Just before we do this, this category is tragically misunderstood. Now, R. Kelly comes up in this question. Not suggesting for a moment he's tragically misunderstood. Yeah. He's in jail for doing lots of bad stuff. So let's just get that out of the way. There's another part of the question that fits the bill, but there was R. Kelly context needed.
If you need support, please visit the show notes for... Anyway.
Yeah, okay. Question 2. Fill in the blanks from this quote by journalist Josh Levin, who was writing about R. Kelly's claims... He was not the man depicted in a sex tape that was leaked to the press in 2002. This is the quote. I predict that in the decades to come, law schools will teach this as the blank defense. You allege that I was caught on camera, butt naked, banging on the log cabin floor. Blank, blank, blank. So I need the words here. The 4 blank words.
What? Yeah, geez.
So the quote is, you allege that I was caught on camera, butt naked, banging on the log cabin floor, blank, blank, blank. Do these words sound familiar?
It sounds like, so I met her in the corner, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
The it wasn't me defense, but that, like, that's...
But, okay, so we need the name of the I predict this would be taught as the some, like the blank defense.
So that song's called It Wasn't Me, and it's by Shaggy, I think. Well, Shaggy's the featured artist. I can't remember who actually. I'm going to just say it's the Shaggy defense.
And at the end...
It wasn't me.
Yeah, that's correct. So it was essentially... It's kind of similar to the Stoddy defense that we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Some other dude did it.
Correct, yeah. So it's a legal defense that, like, despite the overwhelming evidence, that just wasn't me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the song It Wasn't Me by Shaggy is all about. Like, it's him saying, if you get caught... cheating on your partner, and if they literally see you, just say it wasn't you, which is a ludicrous premise.
Ironically, it's not a ludicrous, it's a Shaggy premise.
What?
Because ludicrous is also...
Yeah, sorry, it's too cool for me. In 2014, WhatCulture.com ranked It Wasn't Me the 10th most annoying song of the new millennium.
Oh.
Ahead of Afro Man's Because I Got High and Hollaback Girl by Gwen Stefani, which I think are both more annoying than that. What do you reckon they had as the number one most annoying song of the new millennium?
When did they do it? 2005.
2014.
2014. I'm wondering if Hamster Dance, potentially,
ooh,
was on it, or Nyan Cat was around at that point, or...
Yeah, that was about annoying. Crazy Frog was definitely on it.
Yeah.
Number one, they said, was Call Me Maybe, which is kind of annoying, but the most annoying of the decade. Seems kind of harsh, don't you think?
Very annoying. You know, if that song comes on, I don't skip it.
Yeah, I think it's like...
To be fair, not all these songs I skip. Especially not... Dina Nina Nini No No Nina Nini No.
I mean, we can skip past that here, I think. Okay. We've got to readjust because this one's a bit more serious.
Okay.
Question three. Global public interest in the death of Steve Biko, an activist at the forefront of the Black Consciousness Movement, is thought to be a contributing factor to which phenomenon of collective mismemory first hypothesized in 2009? Biko died at the hands of state security officers while he was in custody in Pretoria.
Yeah. I think this phenomena... So you said the phenomena was named in 2009 or his death was in 2009?
No, this theory was hypothesized. He died a while ago.
I think... And the theory was hypothesized in 2009.
In 2009.
I think the basic premise is that a lot of people seemed to recall that Nelson Mandela died in prison when in fact he'd been released from prison and been the prime minister or the president of South Africa and, you know, had a pretty, you know, had about 30 or 40 years since. I can't remember if it's called the Mandela effect or the Man... Yeah, I think the Mandela effect, but that's what I'll lock in because I can't think of anything else.
Mate, you're 100% correct, and all your reasoning is right too. So the Mandela effect, essentially it's the idea that a lot of people collectively remember something that just didn't happen, or they remember something wrong. So yeah, you're right. There was this sort of idea that lots of people remember Nelson Mandela dying when he was in jail during the apartheid for his role in that, for his role as an activist. But that obviously didn't happen. He was released and was a leader in South Africa and died in 2013.
So... Oh, wait, so is the effect... Because I knew it had to do with this. Is it the effect that people were like, you know, saw the news and went, Nelson Mandela is dead, and people went, didn't he die during the apartheid? Or is the effect that, geez, he's dead and they didn't even let him out?
It's just... Yeah, so it's the idea that, like, this other guy died in jail, so people remember anti-apartheid activist died in jail. Nelson Mandela is the most famous anti-apartheid activist.
Right.
So they sort of conflate the two. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of there's a few other sort of examples. So another example is people remembering the Monopoly man wearing a monocle has never worn a monocle, or at least not in like the main photos of him. Another one is the children's book series being called the Berenstain Bears with an E-I-N at the end, Berenstain Bears, but it's actually called the Berenstain Bears.
Okay.
So it's just things like that like people collectively always get this wrong. And yeah, for whatever reason, just like collective mismemory that kind of spreads.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so you're correct. Question four in Tragically Misunderstood. Criticizing predecessor Kevin Rudd's reputation for making decisions without consulting colleagues, former Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott minced his words when he declared in 2013 that no one, however well educated, was the what of all wisdom.
I remember this.
Yeah.
Because he's very gaff prone and I've seen this in sort of articles and videos.
Mm-hmm.
I think he meant to say the depository of all wisdom. Or something along those lines.
Okay.
And he said the suppository of all wisdoms.
Yeah, so you're correct. He said the suppository of all wisdom. What he was trying to say, Mr. Abbott, was the repository of all wisdom. And a repository is somewhere where something is stored in significant quantities. A suppository, meanwhile, is a medicine that is inserted into the rectum or another orifice. All right, question five, last question of the game. With the capital city Tarawa, which nation's name is often mispronounced by foreigners due to a feature of the local Gilbertese language that requires T-I phonics to be pronounced as an S sound?
I'm not going to mince it, Jasper.
Okay.
I believe it's pronounced Kiribati.
You want to lock that in?
Lock it in, Jasper.
The answer is indeed Kiribati, not Kiribati as it's spelled. So Kiribati has an estimated population of 126,700 across its 20 inhabited islands. And someone from Kiribati, do you know what their demonym is? Like, it's not like Australian or New Zealand or something. It's Kiribati. Kiribati.
That's awesome.
That's cool, right? Yeah. So anyway, outside of Kiribati, the biggest population of Gilbertese speakers, this language that I was talking about, can be found in Fiji and the Solomon Islands. Harley, it looks like at the end of the day, you have stormed home, getting 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5?
To finish with a total of 12 out of 15, meaning that today you are the trivia champ as I finished on 9 points.
Harley, you are the champ. Jasper, you are the chump.
Well, shucks. I don't know what to say.
You're a bit of a streak here, mate. You're going very well. Before we close things out, I would just like to say, if you enjoy our podcast, we would love it if you could please tell all your friends that are into trivia. If you could follow us on Instagram at TriviaChamp or TriviaChump, we'd be eternally grateful. You can also get in touch, TriviaChamp, TriviaChump@gmail.com as well. If you want to suggest a question, tell us that we're great, tell us that we suck, tell us that you are mildly enthused or indifferent about the podcast.
I want an angry review.
Yeah, that's how you know at some point we've made it. I mean, I feel like we've made fun of enough people on this show that maybe one of them will personally get in touch. Yeah. Kim Jong-un, perhaps.
Yep.
Harley, to close us out, do you have any final words for the listeners?
Like, just in general, like, we're coming to a decent mark of episodes. I really would like to thank, you know, the individual, the customer and the society, frankly.
Thank you very much. I'm equally grateful. And we'll see you next week.
Trivia is the real winner here. I think we can all agree.